Hey, welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Devin.
And I'm Farsha.
And hi.
We're back. We're sorry. The summer has been really, really tough, okay?
It has. It's been tough for both of us. It's really hard. I didn't think it would be this hard, Farsha, with you in D.C., but we, like, the schedules are so different and the time zone. I know that sounds like a bunch of excuses, but it's just been, like, a hot mess. Also, in some sad news, Sarah has officially left Hellbent entirely. She's no longer an owner or creator or creative in the process, which is really, really sad. I mean, obviously, we, you know, send all of our love to her, and she has been really, really working on getting herself, you know, healthy and managing her chronic headaches and other issues related to her concussion, post-concussion syndrome. So we send all of our love to her. That's been really hard for me personally. There was a lot of tears. I mean, she wasn't happy about it either. We both cried for a while. So I hate to report that, but that is also something that has happened. So it's been a tough summer, Varsha.
Yeah, it has been a tough summer. I mean, it's not just the time difference. It's also that, like, I don't know if we've talked about this before, but I know it's true for you that, like, Kavanaugh sort of broke you, but, like,
it did.
This summer has sort of been, like, news after news after news, and I try to be optimistic about, you know, the Democratic primary and about other sort of good news that's in there, but I also am, like, so deeply, deeply pessimistic. Like, the abortion bills and then these ICE raids and the stories coming out from the border are just, they're breaking me. And so I do apologize, people who listen and are like, when's the next episode coming in? Because I just had lunch with a friend of mine who listens to the podcast. She's also a historian. And she was just like, Farsha, there hasn't been an episode. And I'm just like, I know, I'm sorry. It's just, this is so tough.
But yeah, it's been really, really hard. And we're going to tackle a couple of those issues in today's episode. Well, there's obviously so much to sift through. We're definitely going to be talking about the situation at the border. We're also going to talk about the Democratic debates as we have time. There's a lot to unpack there too. Maybe we'll just do a whole separate episode on that, because that was a shit show. I mean, it was a great shit show, but a shit show nonetheless.
Yeah.
But before we get into any of that, Varsha, something really fucking cool happened to you.
Yeah. So let's go back to literally a month ago. It's June 11th. Okay. I'm on the metro. I'm on what DC people know as the Orange Line, and I'm in Virginia. I'm going towards the last stop on the Orange Line where I'm staying, Vienna, Virginia. And I'm like the second to the last stop away. I'm listening to music on my AirPods because I am that bitch. I remember I'm listening to Lizzo. I'm definitely listening to Lizzo, Truth Hurts, and I'm just rocking out to her. And then for some fucking reason, my phone starts buzzing and the music stops. I'm just like, no, man, I had a long day at the archive. Who is calling me? And I look down and it says unlisted number. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to answer it. And someone's going to tell me about refinancing my student loans and I'm going to hang up right away. Right. But the reason I answer is because I've been answering calls from unlisted numbers for the past month. Let me tell you why. So I answer the phone and I hear dead air and I say, hello, dead air. I say hello again. And then I hear in the cutest fucking Oklahoma voice, the voice of the most amazing senator, Elizabeth Warren. And she says, is this Varsha? And I respond, is this Elizabeth Warren? And she says, yes. And I scream in a metro full of people, in a train full of people, holy shit. I literally scream that. And the person in front of me, the woman in front of me, looks back at me. And she's like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, that's her face. And everyone in the metro is like, who is this bitch? Why is she taking a phone call on the metro? Like, what's happening right now?
Right.
And I have the most amazing conversation with her. Like, it was the most amazing 2 minutes of my life. I tell her
I cannot. I'm so jealous. I can't even contain it. Yeah. But please, go on. I'm sorry.
So first I tell her, thank you for running for president. And she tries to go into her, like, you know, thank you for being a donor and all that kind of stuff. And I think I definitely interrupted her and said, first of all, thank you for telling Mitch McConnell to, like, go, like, you know, fuck it. I don't think I said it in those words, but I was just like, go fuck himself by supporting nuking the filibuster. That really means a lot to me because Mitch McConnell doesn't play by the same rules and he sucks. And she was like, yeah, thank you for like, you know, appreciating that. That's really awesome. And then I told her I listened to her interview with Ezra Klein. And then I told her I was recently naturalized. So I'm really excited about her immigration policy. And then I also asked her how I can volunteer for her in California. But basically, I told her I love her. And I also told her, I told her my first paper in an economics class was about the CFPB, which she created. And it's my favorite federal agency because, yeah, I have a favorite federal agency and it's the CFPB.
I'm a nerd.
I am a nerd. And basically, then she hangs up. You know, we hang up. I freak out. I have like a tweet thread about it because I'm like freaking the fuck out.
And right, in this, emotions, yeah.
Yeah, in this tweet thread, I obviously tag Elizabeth Warren a few tweets down. And I think a bunch of Warren staffers saw it because over the next day. And then a couple days later, Elizabeth Warren quote tweets me. And
what?
Which is like, because the first tweet literally says, Elizabeth Warren called me and I accidentally said, holy shit. And then she quote tweets me saying, this made me laugh. In parentheses, you're fine, Varsha. It was great chatting with you. And I died. I died.
Well,
and went to heaven.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, she's definitely, like, I just read an article about how she raised $19 million without holding a single fundraiser. I mean, she's definitely reshaping the way we view election and election finances, which is something that people give a lot of lip service to.
Exactly.
But that very few people actually move the needle on. You know, and a lot of people now, especially in the Democratic Party, say, oh, we're not going to take PAC money, all this stuff, which, and I don't want to, you know, shit all over that because I don't want to be that bitch. Just kidding, Lizzo. I am that bitch. But like, that basically doesn't mean anything, right?
Yeah.
Like a lot, like most of, you know, that's not where the bulk of the money comes from. And I'm not saying that, you know, these candidates should like, you know, be starving artists, right? And like run these bare bones campaigns. But at the same time, like it feels like Elizabeth Warren is really putting this sort of reform at the center.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's just really gorgeous to see.
And no candidate, not even Senator Sanders or Warren, has said they're not going to take PAC money in the general election, right? This is just about the primary.
Right.
And I
right.
think what's unique about Warren's strategy is because obviously when Sanders announced and when everybody else announced, they had huge numbers right out the gate. But when Warren announced, she didn't have huge numbers because she literally had to like fire her main finance guy because her finance guy was like, yo, you got to take corporate money. And she was like, fuck no, bitch. And then she made a big point saying, I'm not going to have call time with big donors and started calling small time donors. But what this does, because it definitely did it for me, is that it turns these like small time donors into like hard time believers. And I know believers, not in like a creepy way, believers in a way like, oh my God, she listened to me, right? For even 2 minutes of my time, you know, this donation like made a difference to her, or at the very least, it made a difference to someone on her team, so much so that it went all the way up to her and she calls. And that feels amazing because a bunch of people have received calls like I have. And every single time someone's like, fuck yeah, when is the next house party? I'm going. I'm going to donate again.
Right.
And let me just say, I did donate again after she called me.
Yeah.
Literally 20 minutes later.
And that's the other thing. I mean, it's solid strategy, right? Mm-hmm. Because also look at this in terms of like being Instagram famous. Follow me for a second here. Mm-hmm. So with an Instagram, like these big influencer accounts, you can have a ton of followers, hundreds of thousands or even a million followers. But if your engagement is low, so there's not a lot of like activity, like commenting and interactions and liking and all that kind of stuff, it doesn't matter how many followers you have. And it's kind of the same concept here, right? Like you can have, you know, a lot of money, a big war chest. And if people ultimately aren't engaging and don't care, it's not going to matter in the long run. You can raise as much money as you want to, but it's not going to translate to any sort of
case in point, President Jeb Bush is doing really well in his administration right now. Like,
exactly. So, I mean, it's really great. And we will be talking more about the Democratic debates. For me personally, just sort of disclaimer, I am actively donating to Warren and Harris at the moment. I still have not made up my mind. I keep saying I'm not going to take like a side or an endorsement at this point. And I'm still not really, but those are the two people that ultimately one of those two is who I'm going to vote for. And it's really going to depend on these next 7 months or 7 years or 3 million years or whatever this is going to be. Harris and Warren are getting my money at the moment. Though I did throw a couple bucks to Booker when he tweeted there was some birtherism bullshit about Kamala Harris. And he tweeted and Don Jr. like retweeted this shit about her not being black enough. And Cory Booker basically tweeted, she doesn't have to prove shit to you. And I was like, you get $5, Cory Booker.
Damn, like, Booker. I mean, let me just say, like, we're going to talk about this, but like Booker started off this campaign as like the lovey-dovey candidate in the sense it's like, I believe in love and crossing over the aisle and all this shit that didn't feel very 2019 urgent. And then like the Joe Biden is a racist thing came up again, and this Kamala Harris birtherism thing came up, and Cory Booker just unleashed the beast. It was amazing.
Yeah.
So,
and I was like, all right. All right, Cory Booker, you get a little money. So it's going to be a wild ride. Like I said, it's going to be what, 7 months / a million years before we actually vote in even in the primaries. Wait, fuck. Holy fuck. It's so long. It's so long from now.
I think the convention is like in a year, right?
Yeah. Okay. So let's move on to something much more depressing.
Yeah.
I really want to start this conversation about the border because if things have been bleak up to this point, it is now absolutely apocalyptic. I'm not even going to make my Lost joke because it's not funny.
It isn't.
Because we are living. So there was an article in the New York Times from yesterday, Hungry, Scared, and Sick Inside the Migrant Detention Center in Clint, Texas. And it's this long form piece for the New York Times. And it is excellent. And I suggest everyone read it. And there were a couple of things that I was really struck throughout it. And there are two things in particular that I really want to talk about from my personal experience. I know that sounds weird. And I know, Varsha, we don't like to do sort of historical comparisons, especially to the Holocaust, because that really gets you nowhere fast. And it just gets you in fights with your in-laws, or maybe that's just me. I don't know.
Yeah.
But there are two things that jumped out at me. And one, so there's a line in here and that's talking about the smell of these children who have not been properly given proper hygiene. And the quote is, the stench of the children's dirty clothing was so strong it spread to the agent's own clothing. People in town would scrunch their noses when they left work. The children cried constantly. So I just want to take a second and when I first learned about the Holocaust, I mean, at least for me in California, the California public school system, I learned about it early and often, and we talked about it from a young age. But the first time we ever had like a really intensive unit or discussion about it, I want to say I was in the 9th or 10th grade. Yeah. And I remember I was in history class and my teacher put on a documentary about the Holocaust, which kind of sounds like a bullshit way to teach about the Holocaust. But what he did was he put on the movie. So we're all facing forward and watching the movie. And he stood in the back of the room and he took like a lock of hair and he set it on fire. Okay. So it's like, it was like in this like little contained thing, right? There was no, you know, risk of a fire. And within seconds, the entire classroom just smelled disgusting. Right. I don't know if you've ever experienced burning hair, but it's not gross. Pleasant. And he timed it that he did that right as the documentary was talking about Germans who lived near concentration camps saying that they didn't know what was going on. Mm. And there's another quote in this article, quote, most people in Clint had little idea of what went on inside. And his point was, I just burned like less than an inch of hair. And it was very obvious that there was something wrong in that classroom right away. And, you know, not to be morbid about it, but they were burning more than hair and more than an inch of it at a time. Yeah. Like that is willful ignorance / complacency. Yeah. right?
And I don't,
like,
yeah.
That it's not a thing, right? You don't just not know what's going on.
I don't know, like, the rate of news reading in Clint, Texas, or the rate of, like, news reading in Texas in general, or cable news watching, but I do know that if you turned on a TV or used Twitter or even opened any type of newspaper or news app, especially in Texas, there definitely was at least one or two stories about these concentration camps. And so you said, like, you know, you don't want to make a comparison to the Holocaust. And no one is saying that this is exactly like the Holocaust. That's not how historical comparisons work. It's more about saying these conditions are really similar to how people in other dictatorships were treated, minorities in other dictators are treated, right? And so there was a piece in the Daily Beast, and it was about Ruth Block. She was 17 years old when she was separated from her family in 1942. She was sent to a concentration camp. And basically, they wrote this article because Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez a few weeks ago called these detention centers concentration camps on our southern border. And every single Republican, from Meghan McCain to Liz Cheney, were like, this is offensive to Holocaust survivors. And a bunch of Jewish people were on Twitter, as well as, like, you know, in a bunch of news places, were just like, no, it isn't. This is exactly like a concentration camp. Because fundamentally what a concentration camp is supposed to do, it doesn't have to be a work camp. Fundamentally, a concentration camp is holding people against their will with very little due process and totally controlling every single aspect of their life. And if you read the Hungry, Scared, and Sick piece, you see that in these processing center, they basically had these cinder block cells with a single toilet. Beds are removed, so they slept on the floor. And many children are falling ill. And so it's not just like, you know, the six kids who died, which, remember, there were six children so far who have died in CPB custody. In these detention centers, there may be hundreds more children who are sick. And then these sick children are quarantined and sometimes held in this, like, padded cell without any toilets. And so that there fundamentally is no actual care for these children. And so this idea that it's not a concentration camp is bullshit. And I also want to point out that, like, the official definition of a genocide, based on the United Nations Office on Genocide Prevention, is not this idea that there has to be, like, a mass murder of a minority. It's just this attempt, right? Specifically, like, so it's a long definition, but let me just explain it. Killing members of the group, causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about physical destruction in whole or in part, imposing measures to prevent births within the group, forcibly transferring children of the group to another group. So I understand that some people are going to coil away at me calling this a genocide or an ethnic cleansing, but I'm using those words carefully, because these are concentration camps in which the federal government under the Trump administration is willingly trying to perpetrate an ethnic cleansing. Yeah, I get it. They don't have gas chambers. I get that they're not, like, lining people up and shooting them. I understand that it's not what you saw on TV. It's not what you've heard about in Eastern European countries or in Rwanda or in Myanmar, but it still is a mass terror campaign against a minority group that they want to lead to an ethnic cleansing. Ethnic cleansing doesn't mean the death of these people. It literally means trying to eradicate them from your national borders in whatever way possible.
Right.
And they're trying to use these detention centers to literally seclude brown people, specifically people from Latin America and Mexico, and make sure that they do not enter American society in any way or form, and then use them to instill fear in immigrants in our communities, right? Not just people in the detention centers are feared, not just the parents of their lost children are in fear, but every single undocumented immigrant or unauthorized immigrant, as well as authorized immigrants, as well as people like me and people like my parents and people who are from Latin America who have green cards, who have citizenship, are in fear. Because ICE and CPB is totally off the fucking leash right now. And so that is why you can use these words, and you're not being flippant to Jewish survivors of the Holocaust or any survivor of the Holocaust, because you have to understand the pattern here.
Well, and I was going to say, so there, you know, to kind of add on to your point, Barsha, which is, you know, as always, beautifully put. One of my good friends, and one of the smartest people I know, on Facebook, and he's a lawyer now, and he's Jewish, and he's very sort of active about this issue. You know, he was saying, you know, the whole theme of recovery from the Holocaust was never again. Mm-hmm. And never again doesn't just mean Jews. It means mm-hmm. anyone. It means never again, full stop. And I think it was you, Varsha, who showed me a quote, I cannot remember for the life of me, who said it, and I believe it was on Twitter, but it was basically, history might not repeat itself necessarily, but it does tend to rhyme. Yeah. And that, you know, there are facilities that are being used to house these migrants that were used to house Japanese Americans during mm-hmm. World War II. So we're not, you know, this is not exactly like brand new. This is not the first time we attempted ethnic cleansing, and it will not be the last. I feel like this, if not the farthest we've gotten, because that's also not true, it's the most public. So yeah. far, you know, part of that is living in the time that we do, in this age of information and the 24-hour news cycle, where it's harder to fly this kind of stuff under the radar. But it's also just a concerted effort and a politically popular ideology at this point. I mean, yes, Trump supporters are loud, but also the minority. But they're also, you know, a lot of people who don't necessarily identify as Trump supporters are, you know, racist mm-hmm. and are secretly, or actually not so secretly, completely on board with this plan. Yeah. And you know, there, I also wanted to make another point about this, and that's in another article, a CNN article from today, actually. CNN was reporting that Trump said on Sunday that he wants members of the press to, quote, go in and see these migrant detention centers, right? And there's been a lot of these reports from people who've gone in and seen the centers who have come out, including Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and other Congress people who have been there. And a lot of people are saying, no, it's not like this. You know, like, let's send the press in and show them what these detention centers are actually like. And This is the second piece of my own personal history. In 2008, so over 10 years ago, I was in mm-hmm. Israel with my now husband's family, and we went to Yad Vashem, which is the Holocaust Memorial Museum in Jerusalem. And I remember the tour guide took us, you know, we went on like a guided tour, and she was telling us about the Holocaust and the artifacts that they had in this museum. And I only say artifacts in that these were actual items from the Holocaust, mm-hmm. you know, recovered. And she was telling us, and there was one room where it like looked like a very like clean sort of living quarters, maybe, right? There was like a toilet and a couple of beds and a sink, and it looked very neat and orderly. And she was like, so the Germans were not stupid. The Red Cross demanded to go in early in these, you know, when concentration camps were first opening and they were shipping Jews to these camps. And the Red Cross was given a tour of the facilities by the German government. And they were taken to these special setups where it looked like they were just clean, normal detention facilities or living facilities, when in reality, there was no plumbing hooked up. The toilet didn't work. The sink didn't work. These were not real. These were purely for show. So the Red Cross goes in, sees this, and goes, okay, no problem. So I don't mean to be this like conspiracy theorist, but I don't really fucking trust the government. And I don't really fucking trust the government to say, okay, well, come on in and let you know, take a look around. I don't, what, they're going to air their dirty laundry out? No way. There's no way that's going to be a negative,
how it's
review.
Been done. Dictators have often, I think it was Romania, where dictators would basically invite the press in for like a sanitized tour of these camps. So like it has happened before. Right. It's fundamentally like, right. It's how dictators work. It's how authoritarian regimes work, is that, yeah, they will use the press when they want to. Like, of course, Kim Jong-un is going to invite certain members of certain press outlets to certain areas to point out how amazing North Korea is doing. The same thing is going to happen in Venezuela. Same thing happened in the past in so many other countries. And same thing happens today in Russia, right? So this idea that Donald Trump is, is out of the goodness of his heart trying to find a quote-unquote solution for these big, beautiful detention centers is bullshit. He basically wants to make a case to all of his racist voters and his maybe not so racist but economically anxious voters, but basically wants to make a case that he's doing the right thing here. Because what we have learned over the past 2.5 years of this total like asshole being president is that there is no length to which Fox News and the right-wing media will go to like not defend Donald Trump. There's no crossing the line for them. There's no bottom for them, right? And so Donald Trump just has to give them one spin. And that's what these tours are intended to do. And that's what, you know, this idea way back when we first heard about it, Laura Ingraham was like, they're like summer camp, right? Like that's what that's intended to do, is to find any sort of justification. So like in 1984, you don't have to believe your lying eyes, because like, who are you going to believe, right? And so that's what's so scary about it, is that it's like, it's all intentional. And the cruelty is the fucking point, as Adam Serwer says. Like, there's no doubt in my mind that Stephen Miller is walking around the White House just finding ways to spin this and finding ways to make sure that ICE and CPB get as much money as physically possible to keep these people in there for as long as possible. And it's horrific. And it's not just these detention centers that's bad. It's also this idea that, like, you know, recently – there have been moves against even stopping people from even declaring asylum, which declaring asylum is legal. You're allowed to apply for asylum. You're allowed to come to the border and meet at a specific place where you declare asylum and apply for asylum. But basically recently, Attorney General William Barr tried to order an indefinite detainment of immigrants seeking asylum and deny them bail if they crossed into the U.S. border without permission. And a federal judge had to block that, right? Mm-hmm. But we don't know if that case is going to be appealed and if it goes all the way to SCOTUS for next year. So like, by the time we get like a real decision on this type of stuff, the Trump administration is doing all sorts of shit in the background to not just hold children in fucking concentration camps, but also prevent maybe thousands of people from legitimately seeking asylum. Even if they're not granted it, they're not even allowed to seek it. And they're being held against their will. There could be being held against their will even if they try to seek it, right? So it's all bad, all the way.
Right. There was also on that Yad Vashem tour over 10 years ago, one thing that the tour guide also talked about was the banality of evil. And how, you know, there, you know, a lot of people made this case that it was just people following orders, right? Nazis were just, you know, the regime at the time. And if you were in the military or, you know, you were in this, you just followed your orders like any other soldier would. And there was another line in the New York Times piece, quote, "It gets to a point where you start to become a robot," said a veteran Border Patrol agent who has worked at the Clint station since it was built. He described following orders to take beds away from children to make more space in holding cells, part of a daily routine that he said had become, quote, heartbreaking. So, I mean, again, it's hard, and I don't want to sit here and call this the Holocaust, because it's not. And that it would be disrespectful to the situation to call it the Holocaust. It is a completely new horror in and of itself.
Yeah.
But you see these parallels, not just with the structure of it, as in these literal facilities that are holding people against their will in an attempt to ethnically cleanse the United States, but in the way that people are responding to it. The people in Clint who hold their noses but don't know what's going on. The Border Patrol agents who are following orders and taking beds away from children. I mean, there are these like structural echoes where, again, I really like this quote, history might not repeat itself, but it tends to rhyme, right? And it tends, you know, human behavior is fairly predictable to the point where these sort of atrocities follow a pattern. And when you start to see the early signs of this pattern, instead of saying, it's not as bad as the Holocaust, maybe you should say, well, holy shit, neither was the Holocaust when it first started.
Stop saying it's not happening here and try to figure out what is happening. And when you realize what is happening, you realize,
right,
hey,
exactly.
Oh, fuck, it is happening here. We are living in a basically a pretty fascistic state. Like, you don't have to have an SS officer come to your house and bring you to your basement and, you know, kill you for it to be a fascistic state. Like, this is pretty fascistic, right? This idea that prior agreed upon laws about seeking asylum, rules, norms, and fundamental, like, basic, like, legal principles do not apply to certain people, specifically the people who are minorities, is that's fascism, right? This idea that a rule of law doesn't really exist, that all works within what the administration wants, that's authoritarian. That's not good, right? And you were talking about, you know, the story about how these guards sort of feel like robots. There is a historical comparison there, like, mainly, like, not a comparison, but a way to understand this is there's a really great book called Ordinary Men about Reserve Police Battalion 101 and the Final Solution in Poland. It's by Browning, and it was written way back when, I think in like in the 90s, basically. And he's a professor of history, obviously, right? And he goes through the process by which these former members, he interrogated them and he read their testimonies and all this kind of stuff, or people interrogated them and he read their testimonies and everything. And he recognizes how these people, these German soldiers, turned from ordinary men into these, like, cold-blooded killers, and how they participated in the Final Solution. Right. And it is very much like Hannah Arendt's, like, banality of evil. It's really, really scary how easy it is, right, to convince people to follow orders, right? Because there's two different processes, right, going here. You're exactly right. There are people in the country, citizens watching Fox News, reading, you know, right-wing blogs or whatever, who believe through their own, like, racist ideology that, oh, if you're going to bring a kid across the border, what right do you have to keep that kid? Or what right do you have to asylum? That's something that's happening because, you know, people are believing a certain narrative about immigration. But what's also happening is that not only was ICE and CPB, like, out of control in the Obama administration, but now they've been unleashed, like, totally, like, leadership, people who, like, really, really believe in, like, deporting millions of people are basically given free rein, but they're able to hire more and more people. And so it's like, it's horrific. It's not just within these detention centers that's proof of this being, like, pretty fascistic. It's also the way that ICE is gaining power. Just today, ICE officials are going to use facial recognition software to analyze state driver's license photos without the motorist's permission. So in certain states, you are allowed to get a driver's license if you're an unauthorized immigrant, right? And when you sign that paper in this state to say, I'm going to get a driver's license even though I'm unauthorized, you don't tell the state, hey, state government of California, you can turn over my picture to the federal government. That is not how fucking states' rights works. I know it's different for Republicans when it's a policy they don't agree with, but that's not how this works, right? That is not how privacy works. And right. So ICE officials are now going to be able to use facial recognition to basically pinpoint exactly where they can deport these people, right? And it's horrific because that's not the contract that this unauthorized migrant signed when they got a driver's license. They were trying to follow the law and drive with the license. Right. And their state, like Vermont and Utah, which is complying with the ICE's requests to use photo facial recognition, they told Vermont and Utah, hey, like, we want to drive with a license. And Vermont and Utah told them, go ahead. There was never a point in this agreement where they agreed to be, like, surveilled. And for all the people who are listening, who probably don't listen to this podcast, who are maybe saying, oh, but if you have nothing to hide, why should you worry? That's not how privacy rights work. That's not how any of this shit works.
Right. To bring it back to more immigration problems, as a very much an aside, I mean, that's sort of the heart of why the Trump administration's handling of DACA was so disgusting, right? That was like an agreement, right? Like, you give us your information, we won't use it against you, but we're going to work out a solution for you. And then Trump goes, nope, we might just use that information against you. And it's like, whoa, exactly. That was not the fucking deal. But, and you know, also, I hate whenever, again, in my life, I know people who, when we talk about this, the first thing they say, well, this shit was done under Obama. He built, you know, the detention centers, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, well, and my snarky knee-jerk response, because I'm sort of a sassy bitch is Obama might have started it, but Trump is damn well finishing it. But really, ultimately, the problem with that entire line of argument is who fucking cares, right? Like, this is happening right fucking now, right? And we know about it now. Okay, we didn't know about it 5 years ago, 8 years ago, whatever. We know about it now. So it's okay in your conscience, but that because it was happening before, we shouldn't do anything about it now? Are you out of your goddamn motherfucking mind? Like, I hate that. I hate it. And it, like, again, Obama is not absolved of this problem, right? He was the deporter in chief. Like you said, CPP and ICE ran rampant in his administration. That is not under dispute here. What is under dispute is that we are holding 5-month-old babies in squalid conditions. That's the problem. I don't care who built the detention centers. I care who's running them. And we can reckon with the genesis of this problem. But right now we have a fucking crisis. Yeah. A fucking crisis. And when people start with me on this, like, oh, but Obama shit, I'm like, oh, but Obama nothing. We can talk about that when we no longer have children dying in CPP custody, right? Like, let's triage a little bit here. We're not even talking about getting these kids back to their parents at this point, because that is a problem that has become so remote because children are dying. That's not to say that's not a problem or something we shouldn't be tackling, but like, the stench is so bad that people in that town can smell it, right? Like, we have a more immediate problem, and that's not to diminish the seriousness of the other issues, but like, come on.
As soon as President Elizabeth Warren or Kamala Harris or whoever is inaugurated in 2021, I would like Congress to pass a bill abolishing ICE. I would really like that, and basically reorganizing how we deal with unauthorized migration. But that's not going to happen until 2021 because Donald Trump is not going to abolish ICE anytime while he's president. But we can do our best to pressure him to close these fucking camps, because there were huge protests, you know, in the past few weekends in cities across the U.S. But I don't think it was big enough. They were huge and they were really, really loud. And people are still donating to races and people are still paying attention to these stories. But I don't think it's as intense as it was with the Muslim ban or as intense as it was with the ACA repeal. I do think that the American public, specifically people who are like left of center or people who have like a conscience and are disgusted by this, are a little exhausted. And it sucks that they are. I truly feel for you. But also, 6 children died at the border. And so we should be doing more. And so that's what really like,
right.
The culmination of this is like, what really bothers me is that, yes, there have been hearings in the House, but there hasn't been enough. I feel like there should be a lot more. Every fucking day, they should be hammering this. They should be bringing in CPB officials. They should be bringing in ICE officials. They should be bringing in migrants to testify. They should find a way in there. Like, it's so hard for these members to even go in there. Pictures are not allowed. Cameras are not allowed. Like, Castro had to, Senator Castro had to sneak in a camera, right? And so I don't understand why members of Congress are not allowed in these detention centers. Or even if they are allowed, they're not allowed to take pictures. And like, we have to wait for the New York Times to release a long form piece to realize the horror that is in there. Nancy Pelosi and the Democratic House have like agency here to hold the executive branch accountable. Like, I understand that they are not going to be able to convince the branch to like shut down these camps immediately, but you should be able to break through the news cycle. Like, you want to find a way to break through the news cycle. Don't just pass anti-corruption bills and pro-voting bills, which are great. Don't just hold hearings on Medicare for All, which is awesome. Actually hold this administration accountable, because not just is like not only is this impeachment like argument like so annoying and exhausting, it's annoying and exhausting because your members, you know, our members are saying every other day when they're asked, oh yeah, these camps on the border are horrific. They're immoral. They're disgusting. Donald Trump is violating the oath of office. Like Nancy Pelosi literally said today that Donald Trump wants to create only a white America. That's why he's holding these camps. So if you can't say that and also say, I'm going to wait on impeachment. And I'm not saying impeachment right. is the first step. I'm saying the first step is hold some more fucking hearings. Hold a full right. court press every goddamn day. Camp out in front of the camps until someone hears you. And I know that we can be doing more protests on our end as citizens, but you're also fucking House members. So it can't right. just be
– This is why we hired you, right? That's kind of the point of representation – in general, right, is that, you know, their whole job is to do that, mm-hmm. right? And that's the thing. Like, yeah, you're not going to convince this administration to shut down ICE or, you know, do anything on this matter. But you can make their lives really fucking difficult.
Yep.
Right? You can haul their asses in. You can, you know, really do some fucking oversight. If you're not angry, then you're not doing it right. And, you know, and we have touched a little bit on the impeachment issue.
I think there's two ways to think about it, and they're both totally valid. But they both fundamentally require something that you ask for every single time from the members of Congress is like bravery, right? And like the one version right. of it is impeachment doesn't matter, or impeachment doesn't matter because he's not going to get convicted in the Senate. Right. Or impeachment right. doesn't matter because we have much more pressing things that we should be talking
yeah, well,
about.
That's bullshit.
Right.
Well, we got to send a message.
Yeah. We have to. And then impeachment doesn't matter because if we run on impeachment right now, then it's going to be tough for mm-hmm. the House, for us to keep the House and for the next presidential election for the Democrat to win. Right. Those are the three arguments against impeachment. And the argument for impeachment is fundamentally this motherfucker has violated his oath of office in so many right. goddamn ways, not just monetarily, right. not just morally, but also in just like in just blatant ways. It's blatant, right?
In so far that like literally he's not doing the job description. Mm-hmm. If you went to an office every day and didn't do what you were hired to do, you would be fired.
Yeah.
And I absolutely agree. I absolutely think impeachment should be on the table. And I think impeachment hearings are so important, even if they go nowhere, because we have to send a message that says yeah. this is not okay.
Exactly.
And we will hold you to task for that.
Yeah.
You know, and it's almost like choose your own adventure here, right? Like, what would you like to impeach Donald Trump on? Like, you got options.
Exactly.
Right? And I understand that there's only so much we can take on at any given time, right? But I mean, ultimately, yeah. I mean, what I ask for every time is some bravery, yeah. right? Like Congressman Castro, who's the brother of Julian Castro, who's running for president, you know, him sneaking a phone in, like, and holding that press conference and doing this. That's the kind of bravery I'm looking for in my leaders, in my representatives.
Yeah.
And we need more of that, because this is not going to get better. This is going to get worse. This is going to get way worse.
Yep.
And then it might get better.
Yeah.
You know, and again, we have to be prepared for that. This is not going to be okay ever. This will never be okay. Right? Like again, I'm throwing out Holocaust references here, but it's only because I know a lot about it. And to me, it's a good proxy, because it's still not okay. It's still not over. There's still trauma. There's still deep issues that will never be fully addressed. And we've done that already here in May of 2017, when Jeff Sessions first hinted at the fact that they would be separating families at the border as a deterrent. That was the turning point. There was no going back.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we've already done the damage and we will never repair it. But we need to start somewhere. And this in particular, you know, yeah, Kavanaugh broke me, and he really fucking broke me. Like, yeah. It took me a long time to get over that. I'm just now getting over Kavanaugh. And I still, when people bring him up, or like someone tried to talk about the Supreme Court at 4th of July, and I was like, nope, mm-mm.
Can't do it.
Not now. Can't do it. I think the only reason it hasn't broken me is because it can't. Mm-hmm. Because we have to do something. Because we have to be that last line of defense.
The reason I brought up impeachment is basically like, if I can play an amateur politico/political advisor right now, what I would tell
that's what we do on this show.
Yeah. What I would tell the Democratic House right now is I get that you are outraged by all the things that we are outraged by. You're outraged by HHS trying to track people's periods who are in detention to prevent them from having abortions. You're upset at the domestic gag rule. You're upset at immigration issues. You're upset at healthcare. You're upset at the tax returns that you still haven't gotten. You're upset about so much shit. Find a fucking media strategy to lay all this shit out and create a schedule to have full court press hearings about this every fucking day, and find a way to make sure that these stories are covered, that these hearings are covered. Bring some flashy fucking testimony. Bring a testimony from an actual migrant person. Bring some testimony from actual people who were denied abortion care. Put yourselves out there, right? You're not like, you're not being loud enough. And I understand that political whatever the hell you guys are doing, political media and media consulting and all this kind of stuff, media strategy is difficult. I get it. I'm not pretending that I know everything about it. But it seems like you're sitting on the sidelines. And I don't mean this of every single House member, but I just mean this like collectively, it seems the Democratic majority is sitting on the sidelines. And that's really frustrating because I know that they have done a lot, that they are like trying to do a lot, and they are like doing their absolute best, but they're treating Donald Trump and this administration with kid gloves, and it's not.
Take them off.
And I'm not saying like people always bring this up, right? People always bring up the fact that, yeah, obviously at this point, George W. Bush's presidency was way worse than Donald Trump, and the Democrats got through that. And I'm like, yeah, that's true. That's fundamentally true that George W. Bush did irreparable damage to this country, and Democrats were able to gain back the House in 2006, and they had a quote-unquote normal strategy to do that, right? They went through politics as normal. And I know that
we're playing a different fucking game with a different fucking player.
Exactly. And I'm not saying this is all because Donald Trump is like so out there in his media strategy. I'm saying that fundamentally in the decade since the Bush presidency, the landscape of media, the landscape of news consumption, the landscape of political activism, the landscape of demographics, all this shit has changed in 10 years. You have to grow up, okay? You have to put on, even if you're not wearing, let's say you want to wear kid gloves, you have to wear a different color glove, okay? Because the color you're wearing isn't working with your outfit. It really sucks.
Well, I would like to point out that in 2006, most people had flip phones, right? The iPhone wasn't released until I was in college. So, and I know that sounds like a weird, like weird flex, but okay. But what I'm saying is, is that like in 2006, like you said, Varsha, the way we've consumed news is so different. You know, we're talking about almost 15 years ago now. Like we're playing a totally different goddamn game. Like you, I love how you put that. You know, even if you want to use kid gloves, they need to be a different color now. Yeah. You need to take a different tack because this is no longer working. This will no longer work. And, you know, and to top it all off, we are not dealing with a politician here.
Yep.
We are not dealing with someone who plays by the rule book. And I don't just mean in like the way that like Mitch McConnell doesn't play by the rule book. Mm-hmm. I mean in the way that like this person doesn't play with the rule book of being a fucking human, let alone a politician. So, you know, I completely agree with you. And I, again, I think, you know, people say, oh, you know, Congress can only do so much. It's so powerless. So, but they're, I think their biggest power because they control Congress right now is that they head these committees and they can make life really fucking difficult for the Trump administration and not just Trump, but like the officials. Like you can make their lives difficult. And right now that's a power that we need to flex.
Yeah.
I think about how we're going to explain this. So, you know, my son just turned 5 and he's starting to be at the age where like he hears things and knows things. And, you know, they talk about stuff at school and at camp that he's starting to put together in a more comprehensive way. And I am dreading the day that I have to explain this to him, right? And I know this is very like a very parent thing to say, like, how am I going to explain this to my children? And, you know, how are we going to explain this to future generations? But I don't even mean future generations. I mean like in like a year, right? How do I describe to my baby that there are children his age and younger who are sleeping on the floor, who don't have a toilet, who don't have clean underwear. Mm-hmm. My kid goes through like 3 pairs of underwear a day at this point. How do you even begin to explain that? And then on top of that, how can you begin to justify it? And somebody somewhere down the line is going to have to justify this.
Yeah.
And I hope it hurts.
Yeah.
I hope it hurts.
I mean, not just justify, like, because, like, obviously you're not going to be justifying, like, this, but, like, someone down the line is going to have to justify even, like, let's say their grandkids ask, and their grandkids are reading about this in a history book and are like, what did you do, you know, when this was happening? What did you think? And if, you know, if you're a grandparent down the line and you sort of just shrug your shoulders, or you go, yeah, that was horrible, but I didn't really go to a protest, or I didn't donate to a racist, or I didn't do X, Y, and Z. And I understand that we've talked about this a lot this episode. We are exhausted. I get it. But you really, like, if you ever imagined what it would be like to be on the front lines of, like, the civil rights movement in the 1960s, like what it would mean to make a difference. If that's ever crossed your mind, is that you want to help change things for the better, like getting involved in this fight specifically, because there are other horrible shit happening. There is no access to abortion in a bunch of states. Like, there's a bunch of horrible shit, but pick something. And for this week, maybe pick this, because there are literally children in camps. And I think, like, we were talking about Congress and it being largely ineffective in, like, breaking through the news barrier about this issue specifically, even though they've done hearings on this. Like, an example of another branch of government actually doing its job, even though it still sucks ass, is the census. And the census also has to do with immigration and all this stuff, because recently the Supreme Court blocked the citizenship question from being added to the 2020 census. But even though C.J. Roberts, like Chief Justice Roberts, did the bare fucking minimum and said, yeah, this doesn't really smell like, this doesn't pass the sniff test. It seems pretty racist. Even though he basically, like, said that, and the Trump administration was like, oh shit, we fucked up. Trump, later in the day, because this is how he fucking answers questions, was like, yeah, I'm very seriously considering adding the question on the 2020 census anyway with an executive order, even though it was just ruled, like, not unconstitutional, but ruled probably not a good fucking idea by the Supreme Court, right?
Well, we have, and, you know, we have that's actually should be another episode, because we are running out of time, but honestly, like, what happens then? We've never had to ask the question, what if something is ruled by the highest court in the land and then the president just says, nah, I don't want to do it, and just defies them? Now what? What do we, like, what do we do? How do we deal with it? There are so many questions. And there are no answers.
And, like,
there are no answers.
And fundamentally, what's scary about the census, as well as all of the stuff that we just talked about at the border, is that even if they don't end up adding the question, you said it, the damage is already done. There is evidence that even if you don't end up adding the question, you have scared so many Hispanic people and so many people who are immigrants from even filling out the census. And what happens when you don't fill out the census is that affects your funding for your district. That affects the lines of the district. Yep. That affects so much shit. Yep. And it's so fucked up. And it's fundamentally, all of this is a massive attempt to disenfranchise people, not just disenfranchise citizens, but also disenfranchise human beings from their human rights, right? From their right to security, from their right to safety, from their right to due process. This is fundamentally, like, a human rights issue. And it's going through all the fucking levels, because it's not just about abortion or healthcare or the census. It's also about kids in fucking camps. And I just wanted to bring that up, because I just want to point out how, like, all levels of this attorney general's office and this administration are evil.
I think about this often. When I was learning about the civil rights movement in 11th grade AP US history, I remember thinking, wow, I would have loved to have been there. And now I'm here. So now everyone has to make a choice. You have to make a choice. And there, I just listened to a really fantastic podcast called White Lies by NPR. And it was about the murder of a white Unitarian minister named James Reeb, and basically the violence in Alabama in the mid to late 1960s. And it was excellent if you need something to binge. But basically, we're having that moment right now. And whatever form podcasts take in 40, 50, 60 years from now, like, how do you want to be remembered on that? And again, I know that this is a very pedantic question. It's a very annoying question. And it's a very, like, cliche at this point. But you do have to ask yourself, how are you going to talk about this? And how are you going to explain your part in it? You know, even if you never tell anyone, even if you don't have kids or family members, or, you know, even if you don't care what a podcast says in 40, 50 years, you're going to have to look in the mirror every day, and you got to figure that out. So I think in conclusion, we've mentioned a couple of times, but this week you need to donate to Racist Texas. You can go to racisttexas.org. That's RAICESTEXAS.org and donate. They are doing the tough legal work on the ground. They are there in Southern Texas working with migrants. And you know, they really got a huge boom during the child separation. They were working with families trying to reunify them, and they're still doing the work down there. And media strategy. And one thing you can do is to call your representatives at the state and local levels, in addition to the federal level, and tell them that this is something that matters to you right now, especially if you live in the you know, along the southern border in Texas, but also in California. And, you know, there are many, many states. Just because Texas is getting all the attention doesn't mean that there aren't other states that are affected.
And maybe
by this,
like,
as well.
Spend like 10 minutes drafting a letter to like your local newspaper and just see if it gets accepted about this issue or any issue that really matters to you. Because FYI, your local representatives, your state representatives, as well as your federal representatives read newspapers, or at least their staff read these newspapers, because they want to make sure that, you know, their constituents are quote unquote happy, right? At least the Democratic ones. And I don't know about the Republican ones, but even the Republican ones do read letters to the editor. So there's a lot of ways you can get involved. You can also find a way to volunteer for Racist Texas if you're in the area, or you can pick up another issue, right? Like, what I want to do when I get back to Berkeley is I want to volunteer to see if I can be like an escort to Planned Parenthood or to abortion clinics in my area, because I don't know if there's like a lot of hate thrown at them in California, and I hope there isn't. And like, not only am I going to keep donating to Racist and Planned Parenthood, but I'm going to take some small kind of action. And I think the action is important, not just for what it's going to achieve, because that's fundamentally the best thing about what you guys are doing if you take action, but it's also important because it's going to make you feel grounded. Like, okay, I did my thing. You know, like, I did my thing. Like, you know how you have these bananas productivity apps? Whatever your productivity way is, if it's bullet journaling, if it's a calendar on your phone, whatever, schedule in 20 to 30 minutes to an hour of some type of action a week, you know? And that action could be completed by one donation to Racist, or you could find a way to volunteer somewhere. And I just think it's a good way to keep yourself grounded in, like, I'm doing something about this crippling anxiety about this administration ruining everything.
It's a way, it is a form of self-care. I also encourage, you know, a lot of people ask me like what they can do and all that. I also encourage sitting down and spending an hour learning about a topic, and really get a handle on it and get a handle on some articles and some data about it. And so when people ask you, you can at least pass along accurate information, right? Even if it's something, someone that you agree with, spreading information and knowledge is power. And I know, again, very cliche, we're getting into 1984 territory here, but knowledge is power, especially when the government is trying to tell you something that's not true. When Trump is saying, hey, come in, you can use these detention centers. And if you have a feeling that that's not actually what's going on, like, say something. And I, you know, knowledge in this situation, in the setting, is very powerful. So, oh man, Varsha, we went way over. We didn't talk about anything except the border.
I mean, the border is fundamentally, I people can disagree with me, but it's like the scariest thing that's happening right now.
Oh, I would say 100%. And I also very much, the abortion thing is my, probably my second issue in terms of like, of, you know, what I'm diving into, but the stuff at the border is definitely first. So We're going to be doing more episodes, especially as the summer kind of rolls in and comes to a close. And we are going to talk about these Democratic debates. We're going to talk about, sexual assault allegations against Trump, which, again, is not a sentence I can believe that I'm saying. B-list Avenger team watch for the Democrats for the next
And I just want to give like two quick shout outs. And Devin, you can totally edit this out if you have to. But one shout out is Kamala Harris, because we didn't get to talk about the debates, but like she was amazing in that second debate, because
she was amazing.
Joe Biden talked about how he wants to defend racists and work across the aisle. And Kamala Harris was like, bitch, no. It was unacceptable and it's bad. No. And I think that's what really rocked it for me. And then another thing is not a much shout out. It's like my digwad is we didn't talk about Jeffrey Epstein, but I just want to point out that like people are reading about this. It's horrific. And the reason it's horrific though is not just because he literally ran a sex trafficking ring, but also because like for some reason Republicans are like, oh, but what if like Bill Clinton is roped into these allegations because he was a friend of Epstein? And I'm like, so what, bitch? What if a Republican is roped in? Good. Get all the sex traffickers. Get all the people who commit statutory rape or, you know, assault teenagers who are under 18, because fundamentally it's illegal and disgusting. And one of the points of the story, which you've already probably read about, is the reason Epstein, these charges are just coming up now, is because a while ago he pled down to lesser charges of prostitution. And guess who was the attorney general or like the leading prosecutor on the case in Florida? It was Alexandria Ocasio, our current labor secretary.
So there's, Epstein. Ugh. Yes. So much. So there's so much going on. Hellions, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for being patient. Have a wonderful week. We're going to be back soon. We've got so much to talk about. So until then, raise some hell and remember to practice some compassion and some self-care. Hellbent Podcast is a production of Hellbent Media. It is produced by me, Devin Handy.
And Varsha Venkata Subramanian. You can follow us on social media at Hellbent Pod on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook.
And you can join our Facebook group, Dickwads Be Gone, at facebook.com/groups/dickwadsbegone.
You can follow me on Twitter at @Varsha_Venkat.
And you can follow me at Devin Handy. Also, remember to subscribe and rate us on iTunes and rate us 5 stars, because that's just the rules of feminism. Tune in every Monday and Thursday for an intersectional feminist look and the centering of women's voices and people of color. We look at current events, public policy, and upcoming elections to give you the most incisive look into stories that don't get covered elsewhere.